It's the second day of languages in Second Life, these languages, and your symposium, it's the 8th one. Today is the 15th of November 2015, and one of my highlights at every conference that Vance has been part of is on Sunday 2 p.m. he is with Learning Together, is joining us here at the conference. So we're sharing two events, and we have reasons to celebrate, everyone. Could those in Second Life just issue a couple of glasses of champagne, because this is the very 300th Learning Together event that Ben's been organizing and doing. What he's been doing on a regular basis, here we go! What he's been doing on a regular basis every week, continually with at least one event, very often more than one, over so many years. This is what we do combined in several web conferences throughout the year at Mammoth Weekend events. So I'm here joined by Bron Stucke, Vance Stevens in the UA. Bron is from Australia. Vance is in the United Arab Emirates, and we're going to also, we've been joined by Mariana and Filip Smolcek in Croatia. These two people who are not on webcams are the most important ones here, because Filip is the very gamer of Minecraft, and he will screen share his desktop to let us give a sort of get a glimpse of what this is like when you're in the environment and seeing how he's moving around. And he's going to be in survival mode, so we hope he won't be killed. So now, at the beginning, would it be possible for all of the participants in Adobe Connect to give us a little bit of an impression, or give Vance and Bron an impression, who you are? Just type in a one-liner in the text chat whether you're a language educator, what kind of language you're teaching, and whether you're using these online video games with your students, or whether you know of your students using Minecraft. And let us know in text chat. And whilst you're typing this away, I would like to introduce to you Vance Stevens, who's been a CAL coordinator, CAL as computer assisted language learning, a CAL software developer, consultant, lecturer in computing, teacher coordinator, and currently teaches EFL in UAE. He's a founder of Webheads in Action, a community of practice, and CAL is in TESOL. He helps coordinate TESOL Electronic Village Online and co-moderates the Minecraft MOOC session there. He coordinates the Learning Together weekly webinar series and is on the editorial boards of TSL EJ and CAL Journal. And here's the keyword. It's the EVO session Minecraft MOOC, which he's been running now for the second time. And part of it is Bron Stucke, who is a consultant and educational technologist, community of practice coach, developer, and researcher. She consults to educational organizations and institutions such as the Indiana University Quest Atlantis program, coaching a number of online educational programs, and research issues of virtual worlds, games in learning, and how we can cultivate identity, agency, leadership, and community for students and teachers in these environments. And am I right in saying it's Dr. Bron Stucke? Is that possible? And Bron is located in Australia, and we have been joined by Mariana and Filip Smolcek, who are in Croatia. Mariana is an English language teacher, and Filip, her son, is 12 years old, and he's been playing Minecraft. Yeah. He's been playing Minecraft for a while, and so he's going to demonstrate this live to you. But over to Bron, and thank you very much for joining us at a very, very late hour from Australia.
Good. Okay, that's fine. Could I just say, I have to say this, that this is Learning Together episode 300. The date is the 15th of November, 2015. And we welcome Swan Stuckey, who's part of our presentation. She's going to go first, talk a little bit about Minecraft. I'm going to come in and talk about the EVO Minecraft MOOC a little bit and how we're trying to gamify teacher professional development. And then Mariana and Philip will be following up with a demonstration of Minecraft from In the World. Okay. Off you go, Ron. Oh, I can't hear you.
Sorry, I was being polite. I muted there. Everyone can hear me now, I think? Yeah. I'm really excited to be touching base here with a community that has been very dear to my heart. I met Vance through the Webheads community, and he's such a great leader globally in online learning and virtual world. So I'm excited to be here. My part of this presentation is really just to give you a little background to Minecraft and how I see people using it around the world and how you can get started. And then Vance is going to take over the meaty part of how teachers are getting engaged with Minecraft and how you can follow that up by perhaps joining the Minecraft MOOC in January. And then Mariana and Philip are going to give you a tour of the space. So I think we're kind of covering lots of bases, I hope. So my point here is, I think, with games in learning and virtual worlds, that teachers have been using games in their teaching for a very long time, but a lot of people missed the boat when it came to going virtual, going digital. And our children have not, and so they've raised their head. And for me, looking around the world, Minecraft is the first game that came to school, really, because the kids brought it there and the students brought it there. And they're really excited making their own learning in there, and we're looking now at how we can leverage that. So it's a very exciting space. And for those of you in Second Life, you already are on board with what virtual worlds might bring to learning. This is a very accessible one for kids. So it's really the digital sandpit. It's what you make of it that makes the difference. And where a sandpit is sand, the media of Minecraft is small blocks. And when I first saw this, after seeing the beauty of Second Life environments, and I had worked for 10 years with a program called Quest Atlantis, I was kind of shocked at how, you know, this blocky sort of little world would appeal. And surely kids who play very sophisticated games with beautiful visuals wouldn't take to this. And yet they have wholeheartedly. And the point there is that it is that sandpit, that it has that creation space. It has many different ways it can be played and used. And kids are using all of that. And no less than that is the social space of the game. So that's very important to realize that it can be very many things in very many different classrooms. And there's an expression from a researcher here in Australia that it's not the invention that makes a difference, but how teachers reinvent it in their classrooms. And that's very much what I see with Minecraft around the world. It looks very different in every classroom, and people are adapting it to suit their curriculum and their curriculum needs, but still making it fun and engaging for learners of all ages. So what do you need to get started? If you wanted to do something with Minecraft, you're going to need the server software to run, and you really don't need a great deal of server capacity to be able to run a server. And then each of your users that are going to get involved are going to need to have a player account. And that's pretty much how it goes. You can be using what's called vanilla Minecraft, which is the standard accounts in Minecraft, and the server is free. Or you could be using Minecraft EDU, which is the educational boxed version, which just has some additional teacher controls. It's a more limited version because you can't add as many modifications to the system as you might want to use. There are those options. So it's not really a very expensive option to get involved in, but you do need to have a server and be able to give learners the IP address of that server where it's running. And you'll license it for a certain number of users or partition a certain amount of space for a certain number of users, consecutive users at a time. It's typical that would cost about $350 US for a 30 account license, for instance, in Minecraft EDU. The accounts there are significantly cheaper for educational institutions to get involved. And that gives you 30 something accounts in a server license. So you can do equivalent with vanilla, which is the out of the box Minecraft, and it will be a little bit more expensive. So, but it's fairly easy to get started. I was working in a school 2 weeks ago and we installed the server on teacher's computer and then put the client software on all students' computers in the afternoon before, and we were up and running the next morning. And it was fairly unproblematic. So one of the things, as I said, kids really love to engage in is the aspect of communications of Minecraft. And for those of you sitting in Second Life, this is not something new. You already know about the social space of Second Life and virtual worlds, the capacity of virtual worlds to build community. And in fact, that's how I met Vance and a number of the web heads and other fabulous virtual world educators around the world, actually in Second Life, in the educational communities of practice. And I think, you know, for our learners, we can give them that experience as well, even if they're much younger, in a virtual world community in Minecraft. I work with schools doing a lot of work in digital citizenship, which is very important in this current 21st century skills that many of us will work online and need to know how to do that effectively. And I see kids really relish that. It's a great place for them to learn positive behaviours and to access those teachable moments where sometimes they may not behave in the most positive way, and be able to talk about why that may have been less than the best way to go about things. So when parents are worrying about Minecraft, sometimes they're worried that kids might be addicting or spending too much time in Minecraft. It's often the social aspect of the game that they're most entranced by. It's being able to socialise and collaborate in the space with themselves. And I worked on in a project with Joe Kay and Dean Groom here in Australia called Massively Minecraft, and they're kids from all over the globe playing in that space. And Joe still manages that as Massively Jokadia. And the kids were learning how to manage the world, how to be leaders in the world, and it's a very exciting experience to offer kids who often don't have that sense of agency in their local or physical world in classrooms or learning programs. So there's a lot of community aspects that those of you sitting there in Second Life, waving to friends in Second Life, already know about. So the interface in the game is reasonably easy to change the language of. So for language learning, it's a great option. It not only changes the interface language, but it does change the in-game language as well. So the language throughout the game can be changed. Now, that's really fantastic for an immersive program, whether it's children learning English as another language or immersing in a language that you can change, and they will need to access that language. It's a very easy change at the beginning of the session to change the language and get everyone in with whatever languages that you would like to use. And yes, it is a great idea to change the language, whether it's Australian kids here learning French or Japanese, that you can make the space immersive and require that they chat in the language that they're learning. So there's a lot of great opportunities there to build language into the play. Okay, so in terms of language learning, not just language learning, but all learning that I see in Minecraft, but particularly language, it's a very easy learning curve to get going. As I said, the server is fairly simple to initiate, even if you're running the vanilla Minecraft, and it's you can add modifications to your server to have different capacities if you wish to. Oops, someone's scrolling the slides. Hopefully, we shouldn't do that. Okay, it's very quick to get kids in, to get learners in. I say kids, but I work with learners of all ages, so children in school, K to 12, and teachers, because part of my role is professional development. But it's very easy to get people in and running, able to access the technology, to chat, to build, to collaborate. So the learning curve is very small. Now, unlike Second Life, where building, I think, is a little more difficult, and you know, there's a lot of scripting and to learn, learning that in Minecraft is very accessible. And a lot of the learning that students need to do is accessed through YouTube videos. So if they want to be able to do something in Minecraft and they don't know how to do it, most of them will jump onto YouTube and look for one of their heroes who's already demonstrating how to do that. And indeed, many of the children and teachers that I work with will make YouTube videos on how to do what they're doing. So YouTube's a great companion to getting a Minecraft program running. As I said, it's a very immersive environment, so it's beneficial to digital citizenship programs, to global projects where kids might be, learners might be connecting up around the world, and that you can immerse them in any language, or many languages, probably not any language. Writing opportunities from the game experiences are some of the things I see the strongest metacognitive activity from. So students playing out role play or in-game experiences or situations, and then writing reflections on those experiences. Or taking literature that they're reading and then building an instantiation of that story. So the home of some famous author, some famous character in a novel, or recreating a scene from a story. And I believe you've spent a day in Machinima, so a lot of young learners, Machinima is being built in Minecraft. So there's a lot of really cool stuff there, and I'll add later in the chat some links that will be useful for people. It's easy to recreate world environments and create some fantastically imagined spaces. So we've seen students build, for instance, a scale model of the Titanic, and it's, as you come towards it, it's recognisably the Titanic. Now imagine how much that scale that takes to understand in terms of mathematics and other kinds of learning to build something just in blocks. And while it seems that might be an extreme limitation, if you look at some of the very professional builds in Minecraft, it actually is far less limiting than you might have imagined. And the best servers and programs I see with teachers are where the teachers are setting a series sequence of learning challenges for students, and they're giving students choice and autonomy in those spaces. So it's really important to build this as a project-based learning space. So if you're going to set up a server and really use the affordances of Minecraft, giving students challenges and missions to complete in the world is a really great way to go and to really gamify your learning in the virtual world space. So those are some of the best classroom activities that I've seen. And you can certainly look at a number of different communities. I know Microsoft is establishing a new Minecraft community, and I'll put the link in for that in a minute in the chat. And there's also the Minecraft EDU community you can have a look at, and numbers of communities in each of the countries that you know are heavily involved in Minecraft. So for instance, in Croatia or in other countries, you will find a local Minecraft education community that you can get involved in. So it's a very community-oriented space, and a lot of people learning from each other how to go about this. And I just pulled a few references off the Minecraft EDU server to show you some of the activities that are being carried out. And you can read those on the screen there too. And if you go to that link, you'll be able to see by subject some of the examples of spaces that are being created. So that's really, and also I did want to tell you about a wiki that I curate, which is the Minecraft Experience. And it's an open wiki. I will also put the link in for you to join that. And if you're working with Minecraft already and you'd like to tell your story or link out to your existing blog or program or website, then we'd love you to share that. I think while people think of Minecraft just as a game, I want to just give you one example of something very powerful that is happening with Minecraft. And that's the Block by Block program that is run by the United Nations. And they take Minecraft into cities and get young people and the citizens of a city to come together and in Minecraft redesign the town center. So look at a map of the town center, build it in Minecraft, redesign how they would like to envision it. And then they output that map to actual architects who draw it up as a plan, and it becomes the roadmap for redesigning a city centre. That's what I love about Minecraft is that access to build community. So if you can envisage, and you can find the link for Block by Block on that Minecraft Experience wiki, if you can imagine building a community in your learning environments, then Minecraft's a really fantastic tool for doing that and for actually making a change in the world, but rehearsing it, envisioning it, building and testing your model inside the virtual world space. And so with that, I'm going to hand back over to Vance, unless there are any questions. See some great chat though, really great experiences and people sharing their uses of the programs. So that's excellent, fantastic. I'll be happily reading all of the additions people have put in the chat.
Okay.
Well, so over to you, Vance.
I really appreciate that. That's a great presentation.
Okay.
This is the name of our presentation. You just heard from Bron here. This is a picture I took of her when I encountered her by serendipitous surprise at ISTE in Philadelphia. And I've got a lot of slides here I can just, you know, pass through very quickly. This is Mariana and Philip, and a screenshot from the slide is actually later on in the presentation, so they're going to show you a little bit about what Minecraft looks like. And we're all presenters in Electronic Village Online, EVO. Its URL, I didn't put that here, is evosessions.pbworks.com. But it's a five-week event sponsored by TESOL, and we're one of several sessions that are working really hard right now to get ourselves ready for the call for participation, which will be issued in December, and then the sessions themselves start in January. And ours is one of them. So in fact, actually, we just started this session, Minecraft MOOC, last year, and it really charged us. It rocked our world. We decided to try and keep it going, and due to that, partly due to that meeting with Bron, where I saw in Philadelphia that she was actually running Microsoft Minecraft sessions, I thought, wow. What if we can get her to help us out with our Minecraft MOOC? And she agreed. So here she is. Now, at the bottom, there's a link to slideshare.net/VanceS. And if you go to that link, you will find all these slides. I don't know if I can get a... I don't know if that will actually... Nope, they won't give me a link. Anyway, slideshare.net/VanceS. So the nice thing about the slides is all the links work. So my presentation is going to be about why we got started with EVO Minecraft MOOC. It's really a way, we found out, of gamifying teacher professional development, because we're not working in, some of the teachers obviously are working with students, but the teachers themselves are getting in the game and figuring out what it's all about. And so that's kind of what I've, what I'm focused on in my interest in this project. So the problem that we had to resolve in the first place was, first of all, teachers don't necessarily understand gaming. And so it's my belief that if you learn in a way that you are, you should be teaching, if a teacher models for you, you know, teachers model and demonstrate and learners practice and reflect, according to Stephen Bounds. And so if you're a learner practicing and reflecting and someone models and demonstrates for you gamification, then you'll practice it and reflect on it. And if you're a teacher, you'll probably start modeling it and demonstrating for your students. So to put ourselves in this environment, this kind of environment where we could actually learn something by doing it, you know, by modeling the gamification, by gamifying our own professional development, that's why we got started this session. And it's because in our professional development, our online professional development, everybody who's here is here because they are using websites, webinars, participating in MOOCs, spaces like Second Life. We're all participating in this kind of environment. And so Minecraft lends itself, as Don has pointed out, it's a really nice tool for education. It's got a lot of street cred, and for good reason. So, but the problem, for me anyway, this is my problem, so how I resolved it was I organized a Minecraft MOOC. And the problem for me was, how do I find a community? So, so many times I tried to get involved in some of the, you know, I listened to podcasts, but then when I actually went to try to join those communities, I might be blacklisted off the server. And how do you get the experience? So you really need a community in order to do that. So, problem with this slide, but anyway, it says the challenge for adults interested in Minecraft is finding a community that can help you and getting one that will welcome you. And so my solution was to start our own community and invite educators to learn the game by being in the game. And the, my lack of expertise did not deter me in the least. I found that experts emerged, experts like Braun, for example, or Jeff Kuhn. This is Jeff, oops, sorry, this is Jeff on this next slide. Jeff Kuhn has been, he's at Ohio University, and he's he inspired, well, he was one of the people who wrote articles that we looked into in a link I'll show you later. That's what Mariana was talking about in the text chat, how her son Philip has learned English so readily through communicating with other people in Minecraft. So basically, we decided to try to start this session, EVO Minecraft MOOC, in order to allow teachers to learn the game as they would expect their students to do. Because here again, you're immersing yourself in this an environment that you aren't necessarily going to understand unless you actually do it yourself. So when you do it with students, it's nice to be able to see it from the student perspective. So we did a little bit of a flip here because, as I mentioned, some of the experts coming in were actually young people, like Philip, for example, who was 11 years old last year. Now he's 12. And we had another 12-year-old named Carlos, who was the son of another moderator in EVO. We didn't really know that. They just came along and started building, built a nice tower for us. And we had other people, young people, come along and were really our teachers. So I kind of see that as a bit of a flip. You're flipping the teacher-learner dichotomy. And so that's also very instructive to understand, because you're a learner in Minecraft and you're being taught by people younger than you, really to understand, you can understand even more how you know, how that works. Now, that little link to the TESOL EJ, that's a link to the article that Mariana and Philip wrote explaining how Philip improved his language skills through Minecraft. So in our syllabus, in our the way we lay out our course, one inspiration from me, I should say, has been Dave Cormier, whose ideas that he's developed since 2008, as far, well, maybe even further back than that, they've got some very significant articles from 2008 about community as curriculum. Actually, they're about rhizomatic learning : community as curriculum. But the idea, and then he did a MOOC called RISO 14 last year. And in that MOOC, the first session was about community as curriculum. How can the community actually make the curriculum? So you can set up a syllabus, an EVO, for example, but you can't really insist that people follow it. And if in a healthy, organic session, the community is going to let you know what it wants to do, and then the syllabus should really follow that. So another way that Dave has influenced our session is that he's got a very famous video out about how the 5 steps for coping with MOOCs, and these are to orient, declare, network, cluster, and focus. So we happen to be in 5-week EVO sessions. So what I do is I theme each of these. It works very conveniently. People come along the first week, they orient on the course. Then they start talking to each other and telling themselves who they are. We try to find networks for them, or they find networks. And eventually, people start clustering into their little breakout groups and start communicating with one another. And eventually, you get some focus, which should mean that you go on beyond the MOOC or beyond the sessions and actually do something in conjunction with colleagues. So our syllabus has several components. If you're in the SlideShare version of the talk here, you can click on the red where it says online syllabus was here, because that's the one for 2015. We're changing that now a little bit, but basically we learned when we didn't have experts around, like Jeff and his colleague Aaron Schwartz, who also started joining us as a co-moderator with this issue. We didn't have Braun back then, so we were learning basically from YouTube. Anybody wants to learn about Minecraft can get on YouTube and start getting pretty proficient with it. And we, Jeff set up a Minecraft server, and we gave out its IP address. We're going to be a little more careful about that next time. But anyway, we also have a tag. This year it's EVO MC16. And you can aggregate tags. Tag board is a very nice little facility for that. We had to somehow coordinate meeting in world. Well, my cat has just decided to join. Anyway, so we use Doodle to coordinate our time. And we use, when we're in world, we use VoIP. We used Skype last time. I think this time we're going to use a different tool, maybe Blackboard Collaborate. While we're in world, we talk to each other. So that's the best way to handle that. Now I'm kind of coming to the part of my presentation where I can slip through very quickly. I might just pause. Does anybody have any questions? If you get something going in the text chat while I'm just paging slides, I'll show you a little bit about what we did in this game. These are pictures. We have Helen Myers says, can you talk about using voice in Minecraft? We don't. There is no voice in Minecraft. Vaughn mentioned it in her slideshow, the student's communication. It's actually, there's a text chat there. But what we find it convenient to do, in fact, I used to do this in Active Worlds a long time ago. I would go there with colleagues and use PowWow and Hear Me plugin we used to have. We would meet in Active Worlds and talk to each other as we were doing that. That was such a great dimension. I'm talking about last century, so that was just incredible at the time. But these days, you have many VoIP tools you can use. So when you're in-game, you can connect with one another. We used Skype our last iteration of this course. But Skype, we found, well, it's okay, it works. It does well, but you just have to connect with people and get their usernames and all that. So we're going to try to use the Webheads Collaborate room this next time. But anyway, what we did was we tried to create an environment where we learned about the game by being in the game. Bron mentioned that Minecraft has two modes. There's creative mode and survival mode. Creative mode, you basically have access to all the tools and nothing is going to kill you. And so you can start building, basically. And here's a little chart here showing how people go from novice to apprentice, practitioner to expert. You can sort of, I'm probably getting into the apprentice stage now. I can maybe help others a little bit. So let's see. And Jeff, our leader last year, was Batman. He had a Batman costume. And he also built a huge Batman statue. And he did things like setting up train sets for us to play on. I see a typo there. And so we learned a little bit about powering things through his example. On the next slide. And some of the things the kids built, there's a picture there of Philip's McDonald's that he put in there for us. I'm not sure. I think he had a rabbit burger there. But anyway, I'm not sure what was in those burgers. But Carlos from Spain built this tower, which we could all ride an elevator to the top. And there's a castle, which I think is on the map. But speaking of rabbits, here's some of Philip's work. Philip was really good at populating our server with lots of rabbits. And then he taught us how to get bows and arrows and shoot rabbits for food. So, well, I think the rabbits just kind of respawned once we did that. But anyway, we also horsed around a lot. So actually, we're having a lot of fun while we're, you know, the important thing is that it's not so much that we're learning something, but in this case, maybe we are learning something we can use in other aspects of our work, because we're learning how to control Minecraft and how to become more proficient in it. But we're also really learning about interacting in the game and all the fun things you can do. We're having a lot of fun. We're just like in Second Life, you go there and you interact with peers, and you interact with them in a way that you don't really interact on listservs and other kinds of community. So anyway, this is just we met the zombies, but nothing bad really happened to us until Jeff and Aaron set up a little house with a box in it, and in the note on the wall with the arrow through it says, "Don't push the button." So I believe it was me who did that. Anyway, a huge explosion ensued, and left this damage that you see underneath the house. It's all very interesting. Nobody was really hurt. Not like other explosions. So that took us, I forgot to mention. There's a slide that reminds me. At a couple of weeks into our sessions, we turned the server into survival mode. Now all of a sudden it was kind of dangerous to go there. Actually, my first attempts anyway to go there, I died a few times. But I see, you know, the power of collaboration kicked in, because Jeff in this space was going around building little shelters and putting signs on them that says, the sign said, you know, come here for the night. So in Minecraft, you have a few minutes of daylight, 20 minutes or something like that. Then it gets dark, and then you need to get yourself safe and secure. And here, through collaboration, Jeff built places that we could go and be safe. And he seemed to make them into mountainsides. So while we're there, we're able to tunnel and underground. And so actually, here I'm stuck there overnight, which lasts, 15 minutes, and with a mentor who's showing me what to look for, how to, let's go here, let's do that. You know, it's really interesting experience. So then in the daytime, you go outside and you chop down trees and build crafting tables and make weapons and improve your pickaxe from a wood pickaxe to one of iron and so on. So anyhow, this brought us down to the last week where Jeff sort of went crazy, went deeper and deeper, found molten lava, no telling what happened there. If you want to go to the slideshow, you can read the note he left us, some comparisons with Scott's last expedition to Antarctica. So anyway, I think I'm coming to the end of what I want to say. I almost forgot one of the most important parts, and that is about gamification. We set up a badge system. I did it. Bron is going to improve on that. She knows a lot more about this than I do. But anyway, my meager effort was setting up a badge, a survivor's badge in Credly. And basically, we didn't do this from the very beginning. So we sort of made up the outcomes as we came along. But basically, what happens when you issue this badge, it should point to evidence. And when you click on the badge, you'll go to a spreadsheet where people filled in what they did during the course. And all those yellow things that you see there are tasks they accomplished. And if they accomplished five of those things, they got a badge. So that was our criteria. But basically, the way the badge works is when you click on the badge, if you award a badge and you click on it, it should send you to some place where there's evidence for what you've done. So next time around, I'll just introduce our co-moderators for next session in January and February. They're Bron Stuckey, Marianne and Philip Smolchitz, Rose Bard in Brazil, Jeff Kuhn and Aaron Schwartz in Ohio, Barbie Guitesh in Hungary, me, and Thomas Lawrence, who is, I took his picture of Tifa Arabia 2015, but he's living up in Dubai, I think. So basically, I don't know if I want to go through this whole conclusion, but just showing how Minecraft can be adapted to languages. This is an SL Languages conference, so learning tasks, learning things, languages being one of them, is Philip is a good example, and teacher professional development. And since players are builders and storytellers, then they get a lot of agency in setting their learning outcomes and fulfilling them. And it's a place where teachers like Second Life can learn firsthand about gamification, taking the perspective of students in their own professional development. So the next slides just give other references. If you go to the slideshare.net/advancedS, you can see these slides, click on the links. The first one is an article where Mariana and Philip described how Philip became so proficient in English using Minecraft. And then other ones are by Jeff Kuhn. And a couple of things that link you to other places. And this is a reiteration that we're learning together, episode 300 today. And that's it. That's all I want to say. And I think we can spend the remainder of the time with Mariana and Philip. Questions, we'll have a look. Any teacher communities already where we can play? Well, you could join our. If you go to the.
Apologies, can you
syllabus, you'll find a link
you repeat the last 2 minutes, fans, because we lost your voice partly.
You could join there and interact with us. I didn't get a problem. So let's see. I'm going to see if I can flip this over to the screen share with Mariana and Philip. And I guess. That must be where to do it. Okay, well, Ron, you can come on and take questions if you want while we're waiting for Marianne and Philip. I'm not sure. I hope I'm doing the right thing. Probably they can share.
Okay, we're having a bit of lag. Does matter. Vance, if you just wanted to repeat the last two or three sentences, please.
Last two sentences, please. I heard that.
Hello. Hello. Well, once Heike was asking, maybe you would like to repeat a few more sentences of your presentation. We couldn't hear you quite well.
That's too bad. I hope it all comes together in recording. I'm not sure what sentences you want me to... You know, you can always go back and get the slides. So that's, I'll put the link here. Slideshare.net/fans, and you can just read it off the slide. So, that link there. Oh, the link is at the bottom there. And I'm putting it in the text chat now.
Yeah, can I just clarify, is it gamification or is it gameplay? Because you say gamify teacher, now gamification, what is it of the two? I thought gamification is not really the same like playing a game.
Right, gamification means that, Bron can correct me or add to this, she might have an even better definition, but I think gamification is where you're actually in the game while you're... You set up the course in such a way that you're playing a game. So it's different from playing games. But if you're in Minecraft, you're actually engaged in the game, and you might even come to the class each day and go there and do your class. Homeschoolers are doing that, for example, with their kids. So for gamifying professional development, we go into this game and we learn by participating in the game. So, and at the end of the course, you get a badge, which is something that you get also another aspect of the gamification. Bond, do you want to add to that?
Yeah, I think that was pretty good, Vance. I think that's a great explanation of it. I think if you're playing a game, a complete game, it's gameplay, and Minecraft itself has a game. But if you're creating challenges and asking people to complete certain challenges and you're adding badges or points to that activity, then it could be claimed that you were gamifying the activity. It's kind of fuzzy with Minecraft because as it is, it's that sand pit where you can do almost anything in it. So it can be game-based learning, it can be game-inspired or gamified. So it's a little blurry in there, and that's a good question. But I think if you're just in there to play, then it's a game. If you're in there to create, as a teacher setting up a sequence of challenges, then you would be gamifying your curriculum. Does that make sense?
Yeah. Another important point about Minecraft is it's player versus game. It's not player versus just player. So the game aspect is actually playing against the game and learning how to cope in that environment as you learn other things as you go along. And a lot of that is learning from other people who you're in the game with. So, Heike is asking Mariana and Philip.
Are there any questions at this point?
Screen share is beginning. Yep. Okay. Maybe you can talk us through what you're doing.
Hello. Can you see me? Can you hear me?
Yes. Hi, Philip. How are you?
Okay. So, this is Marianne and Philip now. Philip has started sharing the screen, and I told him that he can share a bit of a survival mode, right? Mm-hmm. So he's going to explain, and I'm sorry we don't have video, but tell us in the chat. We are going to check out if you have any questions. Yeah, okay, good, great.
Before I start, I just want to say that there's actually three game modes. There's a hardcore, which if you die in hardcore, your world gets deleted. And I have an example right here. I'm about to show you survival mode, how to survive your first night, and how to start off, basically, and not die. on your first night. So when you start off, you spawn probably around the trees or on an island. If you spawn on an island, you either have to swim to get to this, like, to an actual terrain with trees, or create a new world if you're lazy. In survival, you get wood to survive your first night, and you also get an achievement, apparently. So once you get some wood, like this, at least three pieces of wood, you click E to open up your inventory, then you drag the wood to a crafting spot. You hold shift, and then you click on it, and it will craft automatically. It will use all of your wood pieces and craft it into a wood planks. And one wood piece is four wood planks. And with wood planks, you can create a crafting table, which you can place and have more crafting spots, and is more useful than these four bars right here. So right here, to start off, you have to craft sticks. And then with sticks, you can craft a wooden axe, which you can chop down trees faster. And while you're chopping down trees, you have basically more wood planks. With more wood planks, you get more sticks, and you get more resources, more tools to mine and attack enemies.
Or defend yourself.
Yes. Now what I usually do is, once I get enough wood, I craft a wooden pickaxe, and I don't dig straight down, is all I'm going to say. Just make like stairways so you don't fall in lava. And once you reach this stone area, you basically dig with the pickaxe you have created. And once you have enough, then you can craft more resources, like a better, it's a stone pickaxe, or a stone axe, stone sword, and the stone shovel. Everything you need to survive. Right now I'm just getting enough resources so I can build the shelter for the first night. Once the first night finishes, then I go on building myself a house.
Can you maybe change into a night mode so they can see zombies or skeletons or other?
By the way, right here in options, you have this difficulty. And to start off, you can play on peaceful because that's the easiest difficulty. Zombies and enemies don't come after you. And I'm going to play on normal for now. And once I create everything I need, I'm actually going to set it to nighttime mode so everybody can see how to defend yourself easily. So you create a sword like this without the two sticks.
Can you show how to kill animals? Why do you need? You need food, right?
I just enable cheats just so I can set the time to nighttime. There you go.
So explain that the zombies appear only nighttime.
Yeah, zombies appear only nighttime. Creepers are like explosive people, explosive monsters.
Yeah, and Heike was asking a question, how long is the night? Night is usually 8 minutes and day is 7 minutes, so you need to be very creative and have to dig very fast to create your, a shelter, right, to survive. But actually, when you are rather experienced from peaceful mode, you can go and try other modes as well.
Yes. And, There's a spider and a creeper above me. That's why I'll hide right here.
I don't know if they can hear me. Where is it?
It's above me.
How do you know? You hear it?
I can hear it. And I won't usually go after them. I would just hide, build myself a door or something. So you find a cave like this, which has water, then you just dig right here, which is what I usually do. I dig through here with all the tools I have. And there's a sheep also. And you craft a door like this with 6 wooden planks. And in the new version, you get 3 doors, apparently. I didn't know that. And I'll build myself a little shelter for the night.
Just about the first night.
Yes. Take a crafting table with me. With axes, you break crafting tables faster. And right here also, there's a coal and such, which the coal, you can use to cook stuff, food and stuff, so you get more hungry bars down here. So it's coming daytime already. I think they're still, there they are. And when it's daytime, zombies and everybody's burning except spiders.
Can you kill them? Where's the zombie? Explain the characters. Which one? Can you kill it or you have to run from them?
I usually kill it. If you have a stone sword, yeah, you usually would go after it. But since it's coming daytime right now, I would run from it and let it burn. It's going to burn in a second until it's full daytime. Once it's full daytime, it's going to burn. Or I can just make it fall in lava.
So They're following you.
Yeah. And if you also hold shift on ledges, you won't fall in the ledges. The game automatically stops you from falling in the ledges.
Why do you need food?
I thought it's to survive. If your hunger bar goes to 1, then, or I mean to 0, you start taking damage. Okay, there you go, they're burning because of the sunlight.
They're making funny noises.
Philippe, there's a question in the chat to find out, how did you learn Minecraft? How did you learn to be so expert? So the teachers want to know.
I was, when I started, my brother actually saw this game called Minecraft, and it looked really stupid to me. And it didn't look good. The graphics were really bad compared to other games today. And I just didn't like it. And then after my brother installed it, after my dad installed my brother's PC, he played it, and I actually liked it. I played a little bit for myself, and I didn't know anything. Then my friend was like, you know about this game Minecraft? I was like, yeah, my brother plays it all the time. And he sent me like a tutorial, like this one. And I started watching it, and it was really helpful. And I started to progress, basically.
Yeah, well,
so
and is it that you stopped playing Minecraft now? How long have you been playing? Or did you really stop?
I didn't stop. I didn't play for a month. I didn't really stop. I just got bored of it a little bit, and then and then after I like. Hold on. After my friends started playing Minecraft again, I started to play it also.
What's this?
What?
Meat. Is that meat?
Meat.
Yeah. He had just killed several pigs. obviously, I think, and a sheep, sorry. He needs food to survive, yeah. Okay, can you stop sharing or playing screen so that and answer the question? Okay, good. Love the sheep noise. Yeah, okay. Love the sheep too. Okay. Well, actually, the younger son found Minecraft online, and he was asking us to buy. He was very young at that day. He was about 6, I think, Domagoj. And Philip was about 8 or 9, and they actually then watched YouTube tutorials and so on, and they played with it and practiced together in a way.
My cousin actually first bought Minecraft, and she wanted me to buy Minecraft. Like, she had a lot of resources on a server, and I couldn't join that server because didn't have...
tutorials were in English, yes. And for a year, I think it took him almost a year for himself to basically understand everything what people are saying and to start making his own videos, right?
Explain that. I was actually inspired by a guy on YouTube called SkyDoesMinecraft. I don't watch him anymore because he doesn't upload like, he doesn't upload like, he doesn't play anymore like survival or custom maps. He just plays like his own mini games that he creates, and to be honest, they're kind of boring, but still actually funny to watch because he has this series called, Try Not to Laugh, and he tries to make people laugh, or he tries to make his friends laugh, and if they laugh, they lose.
Another question. What language do you create the video?
In English, usually.
Well, if you will see, probably he shared the link from his YouTube channel. He actually made first videos about Minecraft, and now he said that he's a bit bored of Minecraft, so he's using and playing other games as well. So
I'm not bored of it.
You are not bored. You are still experimenting, and he loves creating mode a lot, but for survival mode is just for fun. Now they are well experienced, and they can play hardcore or whichever peaceful mode, or it doesn't matter for them because they already know the basics. And what they do, actually, kids, especially when usually during the summer when they are playing, he and the younger son, then they speak in English all the time. And even when they are playing offline, so it makes me crazy sometimes because they should practice Croatian as well.
I didn't get bored of Minecraft. I was just waiting for new versions to come out because... On Minecraft?
Yeah. How many people play Minecraft? For it? You can choose, you can play online.
In total, I think like 18 million people play Minecraft right now, but all of my friends play Minecraft.
No. The question is, koliko ljudi ako ćeš igrati na nekom serveru možeš naći? Možeš ući igrati neki server, ako je public server. You can enter.
Unlimited. Basically, if you put like a zero, in the server settings, if you put a zero at the beginning,
what I meant is this. I know there's so many million registered users, but how many people are online at any given time that you join, you know, that you go online? Do you need to make friends, or do you actually see the many thousands in a list somewhere? Or
no, in a server, when you add a server IP to your server list, then it will say how much people are playing the server, and it doesn't say that it says... Or it doesn't say the total amount of people that are playing on one server. But I think, I'm going to predict, it's probably around a million.
No. Well, what Heike actually meant, I think, that you choose a server and you can enter a certain game which is public, right, for instance, and then you can meet friends there. You can say, okay, I'm playing on this server now, please come and join me. And then several of them gather. Maybe it's a public server where they can build, they can play games together, they can have fun. So it depends. It can be like 10 of them inside. Like, we have been playing in Minecraft MOOC with Jeff and Vance. It was like 10 or sometimes 5 or 15 of us in the server. So he can join like public one if he wish, or he can create his own private one and ask certain friends to join him and play and to build together or something like that.
Yeah, that's a really great point, Mariana, that lots of learners, lots of kids are running their own servers and just whitelisting, the same as you would in Second Life. You have an IP address or a slurl to go somewhere, and you go to that specific space, and certain people can be whitelisted to go there. So there are public servers that if you've got a Minecraft account, you can go join. And they're a bit like the public places in Second Life. You know, you can't be certain what you're going to get there. So lots of people set up their own servers and then just whitelist the user accounts of the people, the usernames of the people that you want to let onto your server. But that's very easy to manage. It's not a very difficult thing to do at all. And if anyone wants any assistance doing something like that, please.
This is exactly a security question, because if you publicly list your own servers, then you get visitors, right?
Yeah, and you don't want to, for learning a language learning site, you probably don't want a public space, but if you want to go learn, you might want to join a public space, but most educational ones whitelist the people who they want to be able to come. So you would write to them and say you want to join, and they'd want to know who you were, and then you'd give them your username in Minecraft, and they can whitelist you on the server. And that's a better way to go. And yeah, if your users, your learners all get accounts, then you can whitelist them to the server.
Philip, what was the largest gathering that you've been involved in? Because, I mean, there's a lot of fighting going on as well. So I'm just wondering whether you actually have wars going on.
The most people that have been in one server is 27,000, and there has been a war in one server between, like, two teams. And you can join those teams, and it's like infinite war until somebody wins. Mm-hmm. And it's been like 4 months or so since they're fighting.
They've been fighting for 4 months.
Yes.
Who won?
They started a war, and they've been fighting for 4 months.
Yeah, they created like a humongous castle for both teams, and then they all fight for 4 months. They have fighted for 4 months. It's still going on right now.
And what do you think of this?
I don't know. It's crazy.
Why is crazy?
It's like there's no other server that has like a wars, team versus team, kind of mini-game.
Mm-hmm. And what has been sort of the most creative project that you've been involved in Minecraft?
Probably a ship. It was really large. I was doing it with a few of my friends on my server. And we've been doing it for a week, and we have finished 7 months ago, and huge.
And say for argument's sake, you spend all this time creating this ship. Can others come and just destroy it?
No. If my server is on private right now, it's whitelisted. I can open it to public, and people can join. I can also protect the area that the ship is in, and nobody can destroy it.
And I'm just wondering whether that was the cause of the war in this 27,000 server community?
Yeah, that wasn't the cause.
Some build and some destroy?
Yes. The cause of the war, I'm pretty sure it was a team built a castle, and then the other team copied the entire castle, and one of the team members destroyed half part of the castle, and then kind of the war just started.
Like in
Oh,
real
wow.
life, like in
I'm pretty
real life.
sure.
Well, yeah, interesting. Okay, any questions from the audience? Would like to wrap this up, this session. Can I ask Vance and Bron to come on stage still again, one more time? It is a different world. And well, thank you very much for taking the initiative to make this an Evo session, because of course everybody's really interested in what's going on there. So thank you very much,
Well,
Bob.
yeah, and thanks for setting up SL Languages and keeping it running for, I guess Gavin started it, but many of those 8 years are yours. And you know, for creating this opportunity for this co-moderation team, this is half of us here, to come together in this session. It's really nice. It's been a great experience, and we certainly appreciate having the recording and having the opportunity to talk about EVO MC MOOC.
And yeah, I'm just giving you a little sort of, you know, who's around, who's been sitting on cushions comfortably listening to the sessions. Of course, everybody's in Adobe Connect at the same time as they are in SL, but we'll be now continuing with our program. And thank you very much, Bron, especially for the late morning hours. Yeah, sorry, I'm stop screen sharing again. If I can.
Yes, it's 2 a.m. now. I think I
It
might
is
go to
2 a.m.
bed.
Amazing. And think, and Gord has been talking very highly about you, and I'm so pleased to get that link. We're going to listen to Gord Holden's experience in active worlds, which is something, Bron, you've been doing for 10 years, right?
Yes. And
He
Gord has
calls,
been there for a lot of them.
yeah,
Yeah.
he calls you the very guru of active worlds, and we're going to see a demonstration of active worlds later on when Gord Holden presents his session, his keynote. Thank you very much for joining today, the very 300th Learning Together event on 15th of November 2015. 16th of, no, 15th of November. Yeah.
15.
Thank you so much. Yeah,
Thank you.
Vance. Am I getting right?
Thank you, Heike, for
Especially
looking
many
after us
thanks
so
to
well.
Philip and Mariana. Philip and Mariana for joining us and showing us around. To be honest, it was the lightning speed. It almost made me feel sick to watch you. It was like so fast. My boy, you've been creating. Thanks a lot. Stop the recording now.
But in our session, you can start anywhere. You know, I didn't know anything when I started. Philip taught me a lot, so you know,
Yeah,
you
come
don't have
along
to
and
be at
have
that
fun.
proficiency.
Well,
Just
the only thing
going.
that I know of that if Philip was ever to enter Second Life, I know somebody who would shoot him straight away. Don't dare to come close to Edge Nation, Philip. You'll be dead in within seconds. You know, Carol being killed by Philip so often. Thank you. Bye for now.